Welcome to Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the rare disease community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is your host, Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent with Rare Disease Advisor. We're in Chicago at the 2026 Annual Conference of the American Society of Clinical Oncology. With some 45,000 people in attendance from well over 100 countries, ASCO, founded in 1964, hosts the largest cancer conference in the world. Our guest today is Dr. Eric Small, a leading medical oncologist as well as ASCO's current president for 2025-26. Dr. Small is co-leader of the prostate cancer program at the University of California, San Francisco, as well as deputy director and chief scientific officer at the UCSF Helen Diller Family Comprehensive Cancer Center. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
It's my pleasure to be here with you today.
Wonderful. I'd like to start out with your presidential address. Dr. Small, you gave a very powerful presentation titled The Science and Practice of Translation, Improving Cancer Outcomes Worldwide, which focuses on the idea of turning clinical innovations into accessible, high-quality care globally around the world. If you will, please give us kind of a condensed recap of the key takeaways of your story.
Sure. The theme is meant to be a double entendre. You know, generally in science, when we talk about translation, we talk about translation of basic laboratory findings into the clinic. And perhaps if we're thinking a little more expansively, from the clinic into the community. However, I intentionally wanted to think about translation in a fuller sense of the word. So translation of language, translation of culture, of geographic setting, of socioeconomic setting, of practice setting. The point being that meetings like this tend to focus on extraordinary science that parenthetically often meet that first definition of translation. Big findings from the lab that find their way into the clinic. And there's, you know, an example of that in our plenary session, which I can talk about. But that in addition to that, we really wanted to think about the translation that is needed to get the results that we see here more broadly disseminated, to make it translated, if you will, into local and regional contexts, because we need to make sure that the findings that we have here are applicable to populations around the world, that we leave no one behind. You know, clearly, there's issues of access, of cost, but we need to call those out. We need to be aware of them. Part of what ASCO can do is to really focus on framing the science in a way that makes sense to a broader audience. The second translation, really, that I spoke of is translating clinical findings into meaningful, patient-centered approaches so that we're not isolated or stuck behind just the cold scientific facts, but that we know what that means, how that is applied to individuals and how that plays with individuals, where we really focus. I'm going to borrow a phrase from Common Sense Oncology, which is a group that is focused on this, where we focus on what matters to patients as opposed to what matters to the scientific journal or what have you. And so that was the second translation. And then the third broad translation really was what I was just alluding to, which is this broader translation that makes the findings applicable all around the world.
And plus, you also have a personal story.
I do have a personal story of loss. And I guess it ties in with a couple of those themes. The first is that my spouse of 18 years passed away recently from a rare cancer. Amy died from a clear cell ovarian cancer, which is incident in only, you know, 5,000 women in the United States, and probably 40,000 or less women globally. You know, I was already certainly attuned to it, but it really pointed out, and pertinent to you and your audience, it really pointed out how much we need to bring science to bear on rare malignancies, because a cancer death is a cancer death is a cancer death, and any cancer death is one too many. So that, I'm actually very proud of ASCO for never shying away from the rare diseases, always, you know, being aware of that. There is a Young Investigator Award this year, a Conquer Cancer Foundation Young Investigator Award that in fact was named after Amy Lin for rare diseases. And that was spectacular that that was done. We had on our plenary session, I think, really two rare diseases featured. One was truly a rare disease, which is a liposarcoma study. And this is a study of abemaciclib in advanced liposarcoma. And you know, these data will be presented tomorrow. But the second, and I think that those people who work, deal with rare diseases, such as you and your audience, I think the numbers of people who do that is going to go up because we are creating rare diseases, right? We're creating rare diseases by the subsetting of patients. It's not a bad thing that we're doing. It's actually a good thing that we're doing, that we understand the molecular characteristics of a cancer, but it makes for very small subsets. And one of the abstracts in our plenary session is looking at RET mutated non-small cell lung cancer, which is a very, very small subset of non-small cell lung cancer. Non-small cell lung cancer is not a rare disease, but RET mutant is. And so that kind of focus, I think, is really important. And I just want to expand on that particular study a little bit, because it tells us what we have to do moving forward. That as we subset these patients, or these groups of patients, we can't shy away. I mean, if we subset them, we got to do something about the subsets. We cannot shy away from them. We cannot forget them. And so it's a great abstract, I think, that is being included.
I wanted to ask you on that point, Dr. Small, you strongly advocate that all cancers are rare. What leads you to believe this?
Let me reframe that a little bit. I think I would say that we are increasingly making cancers, developing more and more rare cancers by virtue of the fact that we've learned how to understand their biology based on their molecular subsetting, their genetic subsetting. It may not be mutant genes, by the way. I mean, it is currently, but we're starting to do it with surface molecules. So we're looking at patients that are, for example, have DLL3 on their surface of their cells. This is found in small cell lung cancer. It's also found in neuroendocrine prostate cancer. Interesting, it cuts across diseases. Each one, prostate cancer is so common, non-small cell lung cancer is so common, or small cells reasonably common, and yet in these smaller groups of people that are positive for these subsets, they start becoming rare diseases. So the more we learn about cancers, again, this is a good thing. The more we learn about cancers and their behavior, whether it's genetics or proteins that are expressed, and I suspect there'll be even deeper levels of how we subset, epigenetic phenomena, how the genetics are modified. It is not difficult to foresee a future where I don't think it's going to be an N of one. I think that's, you know, it's unlikely that that will be the case, although it's very useful to understand that one cancer. But it certainly is the case that we're finding commonalities amongst cancers, but that nevertheless are rare. And so, yes, they're rare cancers. In my view, with identification of the rare cancer comes a responsibility, which is to find ways of addressing it.
So ASCO has been around for 62 years. During this time, obviously, the organization has grown tremendously. As president of ASCO, what do you see as the major challenges?
Well, let me clarify that I'm ending my presidential year, but I will certainly be happy to talk to you about my priorities during this year. My goals this entire year have been, from my very first day as president-elect, in fact, have been to shine a light on global cancer for a number of reasons. First of all, ASCO is not the American Society of Clinical Oncology. It's what we're called. But we are the International Society of Clinical Oncology. And so it's our responsibility. Our 40% of our members are international. So it is our responsibility. I argued today in my speech, it's our moral imperative to be thinking about the entire world. There's also the fact that, we, like it or not, we are interconnected. You know, here we are in Chicago. You know, there's a huge Mexican population here. And what we learn in Mexico applies to that population, and what we learn in that population here applies to Mexico. There's so many lessons to be learned. So that global perspective, I think, is really important. Like it or not, you know, we have porous borders. You know, we're a global society and a global civilization, and that's a good thing, not a bad thing. We need to be able to understand and address issues around the world. The last thing I'll say is, as it pertains to our global responsibilities, is that this is not a question of ASCO exporting its view. It's not a question of the global north coming up with a solution for rest of world. It is very much a two-way street. So there's a number of wonderful examples at this meeting of solutions to oncologic problems in low resource environments that happen to be all over, all around the world, in India, in Mexico, in Egypt, that are applicable to resource-constrained environments within the United States.
Good point. We're just about out of time. Before we wrap up, I want to ask you about AI. Everybody's talking about artificial intelligence and the potential, the enormous potential, the benefits, but also potential risks involved. And I would like to get you to say a few words about that.
ASCO has been very thoughtful about that. There is a number of ASCO statements, which we can get you, that address that issue. However, I will give you some very brief but concrete examples of where AI, machine learning, will play a really important role. I was just at a session earlier this morning that we share with AACR on RAS and the RAS gene. And we've learned how to target this previously undruggable target. And it's occurred by exhaustive, intensive modeling of the structure of the protein expressed by RAS and where we might inhibit it. That can be done with artificial intelligence. And so that kind of approach to drug design is going to revolutionize what we do. One of our speakers today said, as one of his take-home messages, that there is no such thing as an undruggable target, which is revolutionary and really, really exciting. And in fact, while this person had a very powerful lab that did that, conceded that AI is going to be in a very important way to do that. The other way that I'll say, just in closing, is that rare diseases are the perfect case study for the use of artificial intelligence, because I know that there has been a ton of experience collectively, for example, in clear cell ovarian cancer worldwide. Clear cell ovarian cancer happens to be more prevalent in Asian populations. Amy was Chinese, and it's published, but it's all over the world, right? And there's no way, we had such difficulty finding information about it, to get back to the personal statements I made, that is a role where AI is gonna help us understand unique small populations, what works, what doesn't work, what the side effects are, because they can be quite different across populations. So I think the future is very bright. We have to be very cautious with AI. We have to make sure that it's authentic and accurate, but I believe that in this setting, it can be very powerful.
Dr. Small, thank you very much. We've been speaking with Eric Small, who is president of ASCO, the American Society of Clinical Oncology, here at 2026 Conference of ASCO in Chicago. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.